Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Game Industry News Podcast, the Gin Lounge. My name is Vincent Mahoney, and I'm joined here today by Neil Sajatovic, our perennial friend, as well as Bill Kara, the CEO of Addicting Games. So I'd like to thank you for joining us today. Would you be able to tell, us in the audience a little bit about the Addicting Games site and like what kind of games that it offers?
Sure. So great to be here. Thanks for taking the time. And my name is Bill, and I run Addicting Games. And Addicting Games was started almost 20 years ago. It's actually the 20th anniversary in a couple months. And it started as a game portal for casual games, indie games, quirky games, silly games. And over the course of 2 decades, it has evolved to now become a studio, and the studio now has branched out to things like skill-based games, which have their own portals, their own websites like mathgames.com and typeracer.com. We also have actual games like in the form of apps like Little Big Snake. We have Moog.io and Dyap.io, EV.io. So we've always really focused on highly accessible games that work on cross-platform devices. So we aim for our games to work equally well on a Chromebook as they would on a low-end phone, a low-end desktop. So we really just try to be accessible, easy to play, but difficult to master is kind of our sweet spot, and that's what we've been doing for quite a while now.
Okay, that sounds great. Because I actually had been over to the Addicting Games website for a little while, and I saw some of the titles that were available over there. I believe I specifically recall seeing the Little Big Snake one. I messed around with one that had some Monster Hunter style art, but I don't recall exactly what the name of the game is now, because I believe I had messed around with that when we were initially scheduling this interview. But I do just want to ask, like, how long have you said that you've been doing this for a number of years? Have you been the CEO of Addicting Games that entire time?
No, so I think it was 2005. Addicting Games was merged with Shock Adam Entertainment, or sorry, Adam Shockwave. It then became Adam Entertainment, and then Viacom bought it 6 months later. And we all worked at Viacom for a 3-year earnout period. After that, me personally, I left and I went and I founded a company. I co-founded a company named Hall Pass Media, and then Hall Pass Media was in the casual gaming space. And that company was acquired by Crystal Wolf to form what is now called Jam City, and worked there. And after that, came back and got back into the startup space and started working on skill-based gaming. And eventually, I think it was 2018, we were able to buy Addicting Games and Shockwave from Define Media. And then we've been bolting on and acquiring and building stuff along the way. And so that's the current iteration of the company. It's almost 4 years old now.
So I just got a quick question because generally, it's one of those things where it's probably a negative stereotype, but you get those people who believe that game CEOs don't actually play the games you're making. Out of curiosity, are you a gamer at heart? Have you grown up a gamer? Or is it just something else that drove you to start addicting?
No, that's funny that people have that stereotype. I'm probably one of the best Little Big Snake players, probably in the upper, I mean, it's a more competitive game, I'd say 15% of EV.io. These are the games that I love. These are the games that I play all day. Anything that we've acquired, it's been usually because I get addicted to it first, and then we look at, the core metrics and the team behind it and if it'll fit. But no, casual games have always been what I love playing, whether it's like Kitten Cannon or stick games. Those are the games that I've basically played. Outside of those games, the only other game that I really stayed consistent with has been Age of Empires and that series. And then if we want to go into when I was a hardcore gamer, it was Ultima Online, and kind of spent a couple years of my life super deep in that rabbit hole. But when it comes to our current games, I used to play, I probably played over 10,000 Flash games. I used to do the weekly updates. Now someone else does it, I'll just go in and play the highlights. But when it comes to Little Big Snake or Mope or Eevee, I can get on the leaderboard, you know, almost every time.
It's actually great. And Age of Empires is an excellent choice for something to spend your time with.
It is.
And I mean, I played a lot of Flash games when I was younger too, because those would be among the few things that'd be available in the computer lab. So like Super Smash Flash, things of that nature. I did see that several of the games that are on the site are also like on Steam or the App Store. There was one, it had a font very similar to Dragon's Dogma. I think it was called Dragon Awaken. It's kind of a RPG looking style game. I saw that that was also available on Steam. So it looks like you guys have a variety of games for people to play. But when it comes to just the sheer number, how many would you estimate are like currently on the site for people to play at any one point in time?
So I think right now Addicting Games has between 4,000 and 5,000. And then if you were to look at something like Shockwave, which we have also downloadable games, and that site is geared towards kind of older users that like crossword and match games, that site probably has over 2,000 on that site. So we have quite a few games. Addicting Games still maintaining true to the original update every week with new games. We actually update every Thursday with new games still. So it's consistently updated every week. Rain or shine or snow, we update with new games, and we've stuck with that schedule.
So I have a question. I've been pondering this since we first set up this interview. In your opinion, what makes casual games so successful? Because everyone has an opinion or a theory, but I want to know what Bill Kara thinks is the reason why casual games are so successful.
It's a great question. I mean, and there's so much debate between what is a game and really what does a game serve? And a casual game is just a fun, quick release. And it's just supposed to be fun. Good casual games are easy to play, but difficult to master. And they just have a role in the kind of entertainment ecosystem for players. And so if I have 10 minutes, I'll play a casual game. If I want to sit down for an hour, I'll play something like Age of Empires. And so it's a different mood that you're in. It's a different experience that you want to have. You know, it's the same reason why some people will, you know, The Office is still, you know, I think the number one show on Netflix, or when it was on Netflix. But, you know, you can't watch Lord of the Rings every day. You know, some days you just want The Office, and they're both good for different reasons. And that's the same thing with casual games. And so they've always had that sweet spot. They're really accessible. You can jump in and jump out, and you're not going to care about you're losing your progress or anything like that. And I think as long as we're really cognitive of that role that we play, we'll be successful, and casual games will continue to be successful. It's when you try to turn a casual game into something it's not that we've seen a lot of failure. But if you try to fit that role where someone can jump in, have a great experience, and jump out and still feel like they haven't lost anything, I think that's really why they've been so successful. And that's been our sweet spot.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I always joked around with some of my relatives that it's a good thing Bejeweled wasn't expensive, or we would have been out in the street a while ago. I had a few relatives that would just play Bejeweled nonstop.
Oh, it's some. And when you think about Bejeweled, it's a precursor to Candy Crush and Cookie Jam. It was really that they were the ones, or at least I credit them, in my opinion, with kind of that whole mechanic. You know, the match three mechanic was Bejeweled, and that was years before anything else had come out. But I remember playing it early on, and it was a lot of fun, and it was very addictive, and you know, a great easy game to play. And certain gamers, like certain, you know, not everyone wants a VR experience, but VR is awesome, but it's not awesome at all times. So casual games are no different than that. They just happen to hit a large market because people have, you know, can work on a wider range of devices. They're in the browser, so you don't need to download anything. And when you're done, you just blow away the browser and you're kind of off on your day. You haven't downloaded anything. You haven't allocated disk space to it. And so there's a lot of perks with those games. And that's that is kind of what gives them some of the advantages that they have.
Yeah, and the accessibility is a huge point, I think, for a lot of people, because, like you said, not everyone can sit down for just hours and hours and hours and play really long games. Like, I'm a huge RPG fan, so, you know, some of the games that I play will take anywhere between 40 or 200 hours to complete. But, I mean, back in the day, I even still had Bejeweled 2 installed on my computer, so when I wasn't playing something like whatever the latest RPG was at the time, whether it be like Elder Scrolls Oblivion or what have you, I could just pop over to that and match a few things and be about my day. So like with that widespread appeal, I guess it's not too surprising that Addicting Games is doing well. Because casual gaming is popular, and we even have a Modern Gamer review column on GameIndustry.com where a reviewer of ours takes a look at the more casual side of gaming. But looking across like the entire portfolio that you have, is there a particular kind of casual title that's more popular than others, or does it kind of trend to go in waves or anything like that?
So right now, I mean, that's an interesting question. Right now, we're seeing a lot of success in what we call IO games. And IO games are really simple to play, but the traits that they have is you can jump in quickly, but you're really playing with other people. And there might be bots in there to kind of balance out the density of the player world, but the majority of the players are real world players. And we've seen a lot of uptick in those, in the popularity of those games. And we're actually doing a promotion where we're working with a number of streamers that, you know, they'll be streaming CSGO or, you know, Fortnite, but then on their downtime, they'll be playing Little Big Snake. And you can see in the comments, in the chat, people are just excited about it because it's just a different experience. It's less intense, and they're kind of chatting and, you know, interacting with their fans and playing this game. And it's still fun and competitive, but it's a different experience. And so I would say that's what's really popular right now. Little Big Snake in particular is doing well. And then we launched a game called EV.io, and that's essentially our effort to bring the AAA first-person shooter experience to everything as low in terms of processing as a Chromebook. And so EV.io is our attempt to compress everything we can and work on a super low end device. And we've had a lot of success with that game. It's been a ton of fun developing it. So there isn't really one genre. It's just, I would say, playing with people. And a lot of people, you know, will term this metaverse or whatever, whatever buzzwords we're on, but playing with people is what's trending. Not so much a genre, it's just being together and interacting with real life people in some form, I think is what's really been moving the needle in the last little bit.
So I know we hit on this earlier, and I know you, Vince, talked about the flash games that were available in the computer lab. And that was me in high school, where we had a little 2D flash tank game, that was still for some reason not blocked by the high school. So that got me thinking, how did the removal of Flash, or the removal of support from Flash, how did that affect the casual market?
So, I mean, Flash didn't affect it as much as mobile, the switch to mobile did. And the reason is Flash was a slow decline, but the decline was from almost 100% internet penetration, where almost 100% of the internet population had Flash. So it declined, but it was a very slow decline. And in our case, we had only been publishing HTML5 titles 2 years before the end of Flash. So we were able to go back and take a look at our portfolio and port over, you know, the top 50 Flash titles that we wanted to preserve. And then others, you know, newer versions of HTML5 versions of those games had come out either directly from the developer or similar games that we could kind of suggest to the users. So when Flash died, or Flash was officially dead, we actually had a traffic bump because other studios that didn't really keep up with HTML5 games that were just kind of riding the coattails of Flash's demise finally were kind of, you know, depreciated. And so then it probably took tens of thousands of Flash-based sites off the internet and kind of consolidated it to the people that were still active with browser-based gaming and HTML5 gaming. So it was strangely helpful to us. And so the good thing is, from a creativity perspective, you know, it's one of the most amazing libraries of games, I think, ever created. And there's a lot of efforts out there to preserve those and for people to be able to play those games. They're not as easy to play. You might have to download an emulator or some other software, but they definitely haven't gone away. They're still, you know, you're still able to play them, but the technology has moved on, and HTML5 does do really cool stuff. And I think if your viewers go to ev.io, they can get a sense of the neat things that we can do with just HTML5 now.
And that's actually really interesting, because it sounds like you guys were already, I guess, a little bit ahead of the curve, because I know that, you know, Flash support was signaled to be ended, because by the time everyone was kind of done with it, Firefox had already stopped supporting it natively and required you do like workarounds in order to use it for, I mean, quite a long time. I don't remember if it was, you know, years or anything like that. But as someone who works with media and things of that nature, moving things from Flash to HTML5 was either a simple process or just outrageously annoying. It kind of depended on what the project was. Like, if you had a whole bunch of FLV files, it might be a little bit more annoying because you'd have to be like batch pumping out MP4s to load into your new web page, that sort of thing. But when it comes to like the Addicting Games website, because we know that you do a lot of them in HTML5, is there any kind of like demographic information you might have about your players? Because it seems like the community there is expanding, maybe in part due to how ahead of the curve you guys seem to be on a lot of things. Do you know like if there's more men or women playing your games, or anything like the average age of players, information like that?
So the current and legacy player base is, we have this nostalgic people that grew up with it that'll come back, but there's enough of them that it's still a sizable amount of the audience. And these are people like yourselves and myself that played it during school, grew up with it, and they'll pop back and play a couple games, and they might come back once a week. But then there's this whole generation of Chromebook users. And this is what is really interesting, I think, from a game developer perspective, is that Chromebooks actually outsold Apple devices last year. Chromebooks is not really looked at as a gaming device, but for a lot of kids growing up now, that is their home computer. That's their primary computer. And you can't download stuff on a Chromebook. And so what can you play on a Chromebook? Well, you can play browser-based games. And so you have this kind of walled garden where maybe you have 100 sites on the whole internet that offer browser-based gaming, really high quality browser-based gaming. And so we have that audience. And I would say most of our new players come from that audience. And then our existing players are kind of that, you know, age 30 plus that grew up on Addicting Games that come back, you know, once a week or less frequently, but they'll come back and they'll play one of their classic titles they grew up with. The new player base, however, is on the other side of the spectrum, playing on low-end devices, you know, whatever they can get access to. Some of them are playing on their phones. Maybe they can't download apps, and they're not allowed to download apps. And others are on the Chromebooks. And so that's kind of the two sides of the player base right now.
So out of curiosity, with these types of games increasing in popularity, how long do you think we'll see until we start seeing more, how do I want to phrase this? I guess AAA titles, such as Pokemon, because we know there's always been like Pokemon mobile based games that are kind of like licensed offshoots. How long do you think we'll see until we see those type of games start to penetrate into the casual market at a more prevalence than they are now? Because you can find one or two, but most people, when they think Pokemon, they don't think of any of these types of games or Zelda. So I'm curious, and if you think AAA is going to start focusing on the casual market with any semblance of I can find my words, but with actual full force as a viable market as opposed to an afterthought.
So I think, I mean, that's where the biggest disconnect on these types of games really is a lot of people looked at them and they looked at like a stick game and like, well, what if we made better art and this and this and this? It's like, no, the joy of these games and some of the unique flavor is the fact that it's, you know, in the mechanics and the art is quirky. And whether you look at something like Fancy Pants or early Angry Birds or, you know, Defend Your Castle, it wasn't about storytelling. It was about quick, fun, you know, quirky graphics, great gameplay. And so we don't need to change to be a AAA title necessarily. We have to capture the magic of, you know, what makes casual games really good. If you look at mobile, companies like Voodoo have been in casual games and, you know, massively successful for a long time. It's when you try to blend the two genres that it gets a little confusing. But I don't think we're going to see more of that. If you look at Little Big Snake, it's basically a casual game with a ton of polish, but at the core of it, it's still a very casual game that's easy to play, that doesn't have much story to it. You have mechanics, you have power-ups, and you play with people very quickly. And so I think, you know, it could happen where you have other studios getting into it more, but I think there's already been a lot of success in the casual game space. And really where our success is taking this title, these titles, and ensuring that they can be played on mobile, that they can be played on desktop and truly cross-platform wherever the player is. I don't necessarily think it's changing what we have.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I know if I was to play a game, old Flash-based game, and it had all of a sudden really good graphics, I'd be like, is this the same game? Like, because part of the nostalgia is kind of the retro feel of it.
Yeah, they have a feel, and it's really been about mechanics for a lot of them. That's where a lot of the challenges come. One of the most popular IO titles is Slither, and that, you know, Little Big Snake is, you know, it's a snake, it's the same thing. But it's just a fun, easy game to play. It was never really about the art. And that's not to say that great art isn't something that you want. Of course you want it. It's just not every game has great art, the same way not every great game has the storytelling of an RPG. Or, you know, there's different experiences. And I think we've been good at just embracing our role in gaming. And a lot of times people look down on casual games, and maybe casual games have been insecure and tried to be something that they're not. We are not about that. You know, our goals are, you know, accessibility. How small can we make this game? How many different devices can we get this game to work on? And an example like EV.io, how can we make this a fun experience where if you're playing on a Chromebook, you feel you're having as much fun as if you're playing on a $10,000 rig playing Fortnite? And so there's different ways to accomplish that. And we're happy with the challenges that we have ahead of us without trying to become something that we're not.
No, I totally understand that, because, I mean, I've even had moments where I've bought entire games, like, from my childhood, like Final Fantasy IV. I wound up getting that. It was at a very cheap price on the Google Play Store, but I never finished it. They still have regular set save points. It's a portable console game on your phone, and for some reason, that was less alluring during my downtime, whether I was at work, on a commute, or whatever, than just playing Plants vs. Zombies again. Like, Plants vs. Zombies was brilliant. The art style was gorgeous. The story was minimal, but it was still insanely endearing, because you had a crazy dude with a pot on his head telling you about zombies trying to eat this man's brains. It was excellent. So, like, I totally understand that that casual games have their own particular place, and not everything a AAA game does would be served by being mimicked by, like, these bite-sized type of games. And in some cases, it can be actively detrimental. But I guess I'll pivot from that to, like, my next question, because, like, we're talking about accessibility, quality, playability, everything like that. Are there any recent titles that you've added to your platform that have really impressed you with their quality, playability, anything of that nature?
So let's say, I mean, I've mentioned it a few times, but EV.io, and that's because that's the game we've built in-house. Like, we've built that up from scratch. It's hard to do in real time and play it now, but I think that's probably my favorite, because I think it pushes the limits of what we can do with a browser game and still be really, really light and work with, you know, really kind of basic computers. And so EV.io, I think, is a really good showcase, something we're really proud of. Little Big Sick is another one, but our most popular games, you know, are different than that. They're, you know, Dieup.io, which is a very basic tank game graphically, but just has amazing mechanics to it. It is actually twice as popular as EV.io. And if you were to look at it, it would look like a basic geometry game. So it doesn't always correlate in terms of what is popular to the way something looks, but in terms of what I think is really impressive, I think EV.io is really impressive. And that's probably the one that I would, you know, share with your viewers if they want to see, you know, what's possible, I guess.
Actually, I've just decided to look up EV.io, like, as we speak, and I see that it's a kind of, like, Quake or Unreal Tournament-style arena shooter, which the graphics look simple, but it looks like just everyone's running around, chucking grenades, using SMGs. Probably vastly different than what people would think that we're talking about, just, you know, on the back and forth of this conversation. So I wanted to go ahead and express that while we're conversing here, because this isn't a situation like where you find Exeus or something like that on the App Store. This is a kind of drop-in, drop-out arena shooter game. Which, if you have like a familiarity with IO games like Slither, things like that, this might be more the speed of some of the average Gen Lounge listener. I'm not exactly sure what the taste would be of the people who listen to this, but it certainly wasn't what I was expecting, is what I'll throw out there. But, you know, things that kind of breach your expectations can be very rewarding when you get into them. And I'm just kind of wondering if you ever talk or interface with developers of these casual games and about the kind of things that, like, your audience wants to play or they might like within a specific genre. I know you mentioned earlier that people enjoy the battle royale elements, but I guess this would be if there's anything, you know, specifically that they might enjoy or might try to convey to players.
So, we are constantly, you know, in Discord, working with the communities that we have, it really changes per game, to be honest. If you were to look at something like Mope.io, they have different, you know, feature lists that they want, than EV, than Little Big Snake. And I don't know if there's a similarity between these games, other than the fact that you're playing with real-time people and you want to be able to drop in and drop out. And how to accomplish that? It sounds like it's simple, but it's actually quite hard when you think all the different connection types, and the browser was never really intended to be used in this form, although we are using it in this form. You know, latency issues and how do you mitigate that in real time over the browser. So a lot of these are technical challenges that we have. When it comes to feature sets, a lot of it is, you know, keep the game alive, keep it updated, all the kind of stuff that you have in, you know, general gaming. In the IO game space, these games are many years old in some cases. And so Little Big Snake is 3 or 4 years old, started as a Flash game, and we've continued to evolve. There's team modes now, we're adding this pets feature. So it's constantly evolving. It's never, you know, it's never a one and done type experience. On Addicting Games, the website, the biggest thing that we're working on is score-based gaming, because a lot of people like to post scores and have leaderboards, and what we're trying to do is actually get people to be able to compete in these very casual games with each other, with their friends. And so that's something we're working on in the future. But across the different games, they're very different audiences. They like different feature sets. And yeah, for us, we work with, you know, we work with all the different communities because we build these games ourselves. So we do work with third-party developers, mostly on the titles you see on Addicting Games. But when it comes to our IO game titles, those are games that the people I sit beside build every day. So.
So I actually want to hit on something that you just talked about with the interactivity of these games, like you said, with the connections and all of the nuance that goes into that. How has the advances in technology made this easier or more difficult to manage?
It's definitely been better for our industry. When you look at better, more stable connections, enable us to have a more robust multiplayer environment, which is fun. People want to play together. Like, regardless of game genre, there's a large amount of people that do like to play together for a portion of their gaming experience. And technology has made that better. It was pretty horrible for a long period of time. And if you look at multiplayer over the course of, let's say, 20 years, to me, it felt pretty recent that a browser-based game could have that good experience. And you looked at things like Slither and Agar that came out and showed that you could play together, and that was a ton of fun. But those games aren't that old. Let's say they're 5 or 6 years old. So the technology is going to help, and the better the connections, it'll be helpful for everyone in the industry, especially us, because when you're doing a real-time game, latency can make or break the game, and we don't have a lot of ways to mitigate if one player is lagging out. How do you get them back in the game? How do you keep them alive in the game until their connection is restored? What do you do, if you have a massive server outages? You have to maintain that player experience. And so it's gotten better, but of course it's still challenging. And I think Stadia, it's a different type of experience that they have, but I think a lot of people realize how daunting and ever-present this issue has been. It's been ongoing since two people connected playing a game.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. Latency issues and unstable connections have been the bane of multiplayer video games for as long as anyone's been playing them. Even back in, the era of Command and Conquer Red Alert, someone suddenly being all over you with a whole bunch of tanks or something. It can be quite surprising when they just all teleport into your face, that sort of thing. But it's nice to hear that, as technology improves, it becomes a less daunting task rather than, increasing challenge to kind of make it past those hurdles.
Yeah, and it's a combination of technology and also game development, right? Because in the case of Little Big Snake, some games you can keep the player alive and some games you can't. But in the case of Little Big Snake, if the player goes unresponsive, we'll actually take over and try to keep the player alive for a short period of time, because usually we have short connection drops, and we'll try to keep the player alive. And if they come back, they haven't lost their progress, which is really, really good. And our AI isn't so advanced that their bot version goes and starts, killing other players, but just enough to keep them from crashing into a wall. And even that small change does help bridge those gaps. So it's a combination of technology and improvements as ourselves as game developers too. So
I know it affected Vince and I not too long ago. We were him, myself, and my wife were playing Borderlands 2, and latency issues got bad for him at some point. He'd always be 3 seconds behind us. So I think it's just a problem that until we get better infrastructure, it's going to happen. So it's great to hear that you guys have taken that step to, hey, we don't want to penalize players because their connectivity goes bad, so we'll put in this AI to keep them from at least crashing and burning while they're gone. And I think that shows what's great about your company, and I also wish more companies would try to take that step as well.
Oh, if you see, so on some of the streams that have been happening, there's such joy when you come after you've crashed and you come back and you're, massive, in this case, Snake, is still alive. It's literally like you won the lotto. It's such a funny experience when they see it alive, and because it slightly navigates the map and traverses the whole, thing. Eventually it will die. Like, our AI will just turn off and let that snake die, and then someone will come and kill it. But it does come down to game dev. It's you're trying to solve the problem from both ends, and game dev has gotten better. And between the technology and craftier game dev, we were trying to narrow that gap. So
Yeah, I mean, that sounds excellent. I guess with all of the new information coming out about, game developers doing XYZ, everything like that, do you have any particular predictions about where the casual gaming market might go in the future?
So I think NFTs, and it's an extension of virtual goods. What we call them skins, we call them virtual goods. Now, if you put them on the blockchain and transfer ownership, they become an NFT. I think that is interesting because I think that's interesting across the whole board, because if you look at what a lot of the NFTs are doing, they're very basic. They're just basic JPEGs. Then you have games that have basically been doing a virtual good, or wish we could have had NFTs. If I think back to my early days playing Ultima Online, where you had gold and you could buy gold on eBay, and then it got so inflated that just the whole ecosystem kind of imploded. But to own a house on Ultima Online is like an NFT because there was an actually limited amount of space, and those houses and virtual property were selling. I think castles on early Ultima Online reached thousands of dollars because you just couldn't make another castle. You could not place it no matter what. So I think that's interesting. How that'll affect casual gaming, it's yet to be seen. But I do think NFT world is open to so many more people that weren't even into technology, but they just understand art. They understand wanting to own something. They know what a JPEG is. So I think it's interesting because it's really just shaking up. It's like shaking up a snow globe, and really we don't know what's going to happen. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's the next, big spurt, like the way mobile was. I kind of have reservations, and I think one way one day, I think the other way the other day. But I do think it's an interesting space to be watching, and I do hope that there's long-term real value uses that as a game developer we can bring to our players. I just can't tell you what those are right now. But I am actively thinking of this every day. How can I apply this to our games? Does it make sense for our players? Is this just not the right use case for our type of games? All those questions, as people in the business of gaming and in game development, should be asking ourselves as we try to become better at our craft.
Which makes sense because let's be honest, technology predictions very rarely age well.
That's true.
Let me show you my collection on Laserdisc. Well, Neil, were there any other questions you'd like to ask?
No, I think I'm good. I think we've covered a lot.
Okay, well, Bill, would you like to plug some information about your site or socials or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, this has been fun. I love talking game development and just the gaming industry in general. If your viewers hear this and they want to go to ev.io and leave us some feedback, or play littlebigsnake.io, or Addicting Games, our classic flagship, that'd be fantastic. Love to hear from gamers, players, developers. And this is kind of the fun part of it, is interacting with people. Otherwise, we're kind of just behind the curtains. And I was happy to do this interview.
Okay, hey, well, it's been great having you. I appreciate you taking the time out to talk with us.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I don't normally do the outro. Neil, you do the
Oh, well, in that case, then, we're sorry, everyone. We're having a week. Thank you for joining us on the Gin Lounge podcast. Of course, we had Bill Kara here. We do plan to have more guests in the future whenever we can get it scheduled. So remember, you can find us wherever podcasts are listened to, or if any raving derelicts on street corners are yelling about video games, it might be what we're talking about. So feel free to join us next time. Thanks for listening, guys.
I had a brain fart.